Il-program li ser tisimaw huwa miġjub lilkom bix-xewqa tajba ta' Farsons Foundation.
This is Patricia Camilleri, welcoming you to University Matters on Campus FM. In this series, together, we shall continue to discover more about the work of the university's academics and about the many activities that will be taking place on campus over the next year. I'm really delighted to have with me in the studio today a now PhD graduate, Dr. Keith Bohajar. Just a few words about my guest. He's a PhD graduate now in archaeology from the University of Malta, specializing in hydrology, medieval and early modern Maltese cave settlements and their related water management systems, as well as rural landscape development. Dr. Bohajar is a visiting lecturer in Paleo-Christian and Medieval Archaeology at the Department of Classics and Archaeology here at the University, and his research interests include Central Mediterranean, North African and Near Eastern water management systems, troglodytism and Mediterranean settlement location and distribution. Welcome to the program, Keith.
Thank you.
I take the liberty of calling you Keith because we've obviously known you for a long time. Today we're going to discuss this PhD, which you've just completed. It has quite a long title, Water Management Technology as a Contributing Factor in the Development of the Rural Landscape of the Maltese Archipelago, Making a Case for the Late Medieval Period. I'm seeing the huge volume in front of me, so we've only got 28 minutes, so we'll have to pick out the salient points, I think. Before talking about your thesis, though, I'd like to ask you about the importance of water, especially in these water-defined as semi-arid environments such as Malta. The water systems you investigated would have covered fresh drinking water as well as agricultural irrigation water. They say water is the new oil nowadays in the sense that we're all going to be battling for it. But water has been important, obviously, over the ages.
When dealing with water, you need to consider the fact that it's Malta as a semi-arid environment, as you've just quite rightly pointed out, and water is also unevenly distributed locally. So you find areas in Malta which have more access to a perennial water supply. You've got the central and the southeastern areas of Malta in which water is much more limited. So that also makes a great difference when actually considering settlement location, when considering water availability vis-a-vis a particular settlement. But this is a point that I would like to delve deeper upon at a slightly later stage, because it all depends on geology, actually. And one of the aspects of my research have shown that, obviously, we all have been taught in our primary and secondary school years that you've got two aquifers in Malta. You've got the Perched Aquifer, which is water gathering above a blue clay deposit. And then you've got the mean sea level aquifer, which is an aquifer composed of fresh water, which is literally floating above mean sea level. But that's not the only situation that you would find locally, because I have carried on research that was based on prior geological investigation. And I've realized that you've got areas in Malta in which you find globigerina limestone deposits, in which you've got blue clay deposits, which are embedded within, and therefore you can get a situation where you have the formation of a very localized perched aquifer deposit. And for instance, if you take the area of Cordine at Paula, you've got a toponym there which is water-related, and that's Aindwili. And actually, quite probably, that's the origin of that toponym. So it's a much more complex situation other than we were actually led to think.
Most definitely, I'm sure. You studied the water management, you say, in the high and late medieval periods, with quite precise dates, 1091 to 1530, just before the arrival of the Knights of St. John, of course. You're talking reservoirs, cisterns, wells, and perched aquifers, which you've just been mentioned, and of which there are more than one type, of course. Perhaps you could define each of these. A reservoir, what's the difference between a reservoir and a cistern? These are terms which, of course, you're very familiar with, but perhaps our listeners are not.
So I'll start off by defining or giving a very brief definition of a well. So a well actually would typically consist of a shaft. It can be square shaped or circular, which would be accessing an aquifer. So we've got water, which in the northwest regions of Malta would be typically gathering above a blue clay deposit. And therefore you've got a shaft that would be accessing the aquiferous source. So that would be typically a well. So a well would be tapping the water, which is located within an underground situation. Now, when it comes to a cistern can be compared to a tank, to a water tank, and typically within a Maltese environment, cisterns would be rock cut or excavated, and therefore you would get the harvesting of rainwater that would be stored within cisterns. Now, the difference between a cistern and a reservoir is quite questionable in the sense that they're both storing water. But within a local context, and if you're considering the situation that we're constantly encountering in the northwest part of Malta, reservoirs would be built above the ground level, and therefore we're dealing with a circular, rectangular, or square-shaped water tank. But these reservoirs would not be collecting rainwater, but they would be storing water within that would be tapped from the perched aquifer. But they're still similar to cisterns.
About the perched aquifers, can we go back a little bit to the geology of the Maltese Islands just to explain exactly why there are aquifers of a certain type in certain areas and other types in other areas, and as you said before, some areas not at all?
Okay, so typically there are five primary geological deposits in Malta. So you've got the north and northwest areas that are characterized by exposed upper coral limestone deposits, which are permeable, so rainwater can actually pass through. Upper coralline typically has got a lot of fissures and bedding planes, so these would aid water percolation within such deposits. But then underlying the upper coralline limestone deposits would be a blue clay layer. This is impermeable, so a perched aquifer can form above. So in northwest Malta, water management is typically characterized by the tapping of this perched aquiferous source, which is gathering above blue clay. Now, if you're looking at the central plains of Malta or the southeast or southwestern parts of Malta, these would be characterized with the Globigina limestone deposits. You would find a few outcrops of lower coralline limestone deposits. Both deposits are permeable, but research starting off in the 1950s has actually shown how forming within these Globigina limestone deposits, you would find a very localized situation where pockets of blue clay, or what we can more typically call as marls, would be actually limiting percolation within the Globigina limestone deposits, and therefore you can find the formation of very small aquifers there. For instance, Halmilliri is a case in point. Halmilliri is a medieval settlement which is located in between Zurri, Abba, and Rendi. And you would find a situation where at Halmilliri, you've got a settlement which is actually lying above such a situation. So it's actually a situation which necessitates much more investigation. But we know that there are a number of wells at Halmilliri which are unfortunately difficult to date, but these are tapping the aquifer. If we're looking at a site of great archaeological importance, and I'm mentioning the site of Tassilj at Marsa Shlok, you would find a very similar situation. You've got Globigina limestone deposits, and within the site of Tassilj, you would also find a series of shaft wells that would be tapping this aquiferous source. So we're dealing with another type of perched aquifer, but this time round it is forming within Globigina limestone deposits.
You say that the upper coralline limestone perched aquifer subterranean galleries share some common characteristics with the technologies of the Islamic and Roman world. Because we've mentioned wells, but in actual fact these aquifers don't always, you don't get the water from the well. Sometimes it either spontaneously comes out of the side of the rock, Or you have these absolutely wonderful galleries, exactly, which I'm sure more than half Malta has absolutely no idea about at all. Tell us about those.
Yes, so actually...
And their origin.
Yes, all this started off while researching for my MA thesis, which centered on troglodyticism in northwest Malta, south of the Great Fault. And I was actually looking therefore at cave dwellings and at cave settlements. But it immediately dawned upon me that when we're dealing with cave settlements, we're dealing with a situation where you've got the caves that are occupying a space which is not related to agriculture, but it is directly located above agricultural space and agricultural land. And immediately below the caves, you would find these perched aquifer galleries, which are literally a tunnel or a near horizontal tunnel, which would be typically around 60 to 80 centimeters wide, about a meter or a meter and a half long. Therefore, they would be sufficiently large to enable the comfortable passage of a single person through. And these galleries would typically, within a Maltese context, extend roughly to about 30, 50, at the most 150 meters in length. And they would be tapping the perched aquifer. So we're dealing with a gallery which would be excavated into an upper coral limestone deposit. Quite typically in Malta, most galleries are actually excavated into a specific layer of upper coral limestone, which is technically known as Mtarfa Member. It is a very brittle type of deposit, and people in the past would have certainly realized that Mtarfa Member would be located exactly above blue clay, and therefore it can be used as an indicator to actually detect the approximate location of a perched aquifer. So these near horizontal galleries only function as a canal or as a pipe, because they would be tapping the aquifer, and then their job would be to actually convey that water to the outside area of the gallery itself. From there you would find a series of masonry canals that would be opened and closed according to where you would want the water to actually irrigate any arable land.
Describe these galleries, because they really are very beautiful.
Exactly. So I've mentioned the typical dimension of a gallery. Now, within a Maltese context, I really do believe that we've got two different gallery typologies. We've got galleries which are typically composed of just this near horizontal rock excavated passageway, because one has to emphasize the fact that all galleries are man-made, so actually they have been excavated by hand. And at the bottom of the gallery you would find a rock-cut canal that would be conveying water to the entrance of the gallery itself.
By gravity.
So it's a gravity-fed system, actually, and that's the ingenious part of it all, because you're actually irrigating your land without necessitating a situation where you need to actually have an ori or a senia, which would be water-lifting machineries or devices. And therefore, simply by opening and closing a canal system, you can actually irrigate your land. These galleries are typically fronted by a reservoir in which water would be stored, and farmers cultivating this land would be typically being engaged into a water time-sharing agreement. So a farmer would have access to the gallery water and the reservoir water for a day and a night. For the following day, the reservoir would be allowed to actually fill up with water again, and then the next farmer can actually make use of the water gathering within. Now, what is interesting is the fact that within a local context, we've got galleries which are simply composed of a near horizontal tunnel. And then we've got galleries which can be actually compared to an anat or a kanat system. So these galleries would be much more complex, and actually they would not only be composed of a near horizontal gallery system, but they would also contain shaft wells. And as a matter of fact, I do believe that such gallery systems would be much more complex. Quite probably the expertise in order to excavate these galleries would have been imported from abroad, probably from neighboring Sicily. And what is quite curious is the fact that looking at all the kanat type galleries that are available locally, I've realized that most of these are related to crown property, or what we call the fiefs or the faded, the medieval feudo. And therefore, I do suspect that such galleries might have actually been excavated or might have actually been commissioned during the course of the 13th or the 14th century. And they were very intimately related to tracts of land which were being developed as a giardino. Now, I think the term giardino needs to be qualified and needs to be explained here. So, typically, I do believe that during the course of the late medieval period, as Malta was experiencing quite possibly a population increase, a demographic increase, Malta would have been faced with the need for more agricultural land. And such land, therefore, would be composed of the selection of valley areas which would have contained access to water deposits, and therefore the development of a giardino would have entailed the construction of terraced land, the excavation of these galleries. And what is interesting is the fact that these galleries have a literally great impact on the Maltese landscape. We tend to look at Malta as being quite water deprived, and Malta actually is, with 560 millimeters of rainfall. We can actually classify Malta as experiencing a semi-arid type of climate. But on the other hand, one needs to consider that during the course of the late medieval period, the Maltese population quite probably never exceeded the 17,000 people mark. Therefore, considering the water resources of Malta during the medieval period, I would say that Malta had quite copious water deposits. It all depended on how you are going to manage these water sources. And therefore, areas outside Rabat, for instance, areas immediately outside Rabat would consist, for instance, of Jenin es-Sultan or Ain Klib. All these are giardini. And you would find that the water source of these giardini is actually originating from a perched aquifer gallery. And therefore, the impact that galleries are having on this landscape is that if you're getting a field which is or land which is dependent on the annual rainfall, you would only be able to cultivate two crops per year. But galleries actually allow the cultivation of a third crop during the summer period, and therefore land which contains access to this gallery water would actually have much more economic value. A more stable type of agriculture can be practiced within.
I have visited some of these with you, actually, some of these galleries, and they are sometimes placed in areas that are very, very much hidden from sight until you actually come upon them, like Sibliya, for example, where if you sort of look across the land, it's quite typical garrig or small fields. Mm-hmm. But then when you actually go into the valley, it's like Shangri-La. You suddenly find yourself in this absolutely gorgeous, beautiful fruit trees and very fruitful area, very healthy area from the agricultural point of view. So I think probably people don't know about them because they're quite actually hidden. They don't,
exactly,
either on purpose or by, you know, either by design or not, but actually quite hidden.
Yes, they are. And I don't think they would have been hidden on purpose. It's just the fact that in order to actually excavate a gallery, you would only need a passageway that is roughly about 60 to 80 centimeters wide and only about 1.5 meters high. So you're literally just being faced with a doorway rock cut entrance in your cliff face. And actually what gives away the location of galleries would be reed growth, because reeds actually necessitate a perennial water source. So just by looking at reed growths, one would actually get an approximate idea of the presence of these galleries. But you've mentioned Sibliya. Sibliya is located within two valley systems. The major valley system would be with Irum. The secondary valley system would be with Hazrun. And within Sibliya and with Irum, with Irum and with Hazrun alone, I have found over 28 different water galleries. So,
no wonder it's so fertile.
Exactly. It's a situation where the hydrology of the valley has been completely modified. And instead of getting farmers making use of a watercourse that would flow through the riverbed, and one must say that would be a seasonal water source, farmers during the course of the medieval and the early modern period would have managed to tap a perennial water source, and this water is originating from within the galleries themselves.
apart from the trudging around the Malta, and I suppose few Maltese know the countryside better than you by now, you must have found information also from archival resources. What kind of archival resources did you research?
Yes, that's a pretty
here
good...
Here and abroad, perhaps.
Yes, that's a pretty good question, actually, because I tried to actually date the Maltese gallery systems by adopting a retrogressive analytical approach. And by a retrogressive approach, I mean I started to look at the most recent sources and then trying to work my way backwards in order to try and establish a tentative date when these water galleries started to appear within a Maltese landscape. So I was looking at British 19th century sources. You've got British period Cabrai, which would date back to the 1860s. That would give us a pretty good idea of government-owned property.
Is Cabrai, just a quick definition?
Yes, a Cabrai would be a volume, a compiled volume that would be describing a particular land area. So you would get a textual description of, for instance, the Eintofaha property, which is government-owned property, and that would be accompanied by a plan. So the plans would be showing you the location of fields. Sometimes they would go into the detail of what is being grown in those fields. Sometimes Cabrai would also give you an indication of the water sources. Even though, quite interestingly, Cabrai almost never make actually the mention of a water gallery, which in the Cabrai would find being referred to as a mina d'acqua. But sometimes they do. But the indication of the location of a gallery would be shown within a Cabrai context by looking at the reservoir, the water reservoir, which would be fronting
the telltale sign.
Exactly, your gallery system. Now, we've got also night spirit Cabrai in Malta. So you've got 18th century Cabrai, which would date back to the early 1720s, and then you've got 16 Cabrai dating to the 1640s. So looking at this extensive documentation, I tried to work my way backwards, and actually I've managed to come to the conclusion that a number of galleries actually belong to the pre-Knights period. And just to give you an idea, for instance, all of us would be familiar with the Winyakurt Aqueduct, which was conveying water from the Rabat area to Valletta. Now, very few realize that this Winyakurt Aqueduct was actually tapping water that was originating from these Persian aquifer galleries. They would have been present within the landscape prior to the arrival of the Knights of St. John in Malta. But all the Knights did was to actually deprive Giardini, such as Giannis Sultan, from the Persian aquifer water and convey that water to Valletta. So after the construction of the Winyakurt Aqueduct, one starts finding cases where farmers would be complaining that the water they're left with is insufficient to allow the cultivation of the land they're working.
Well, the Knights were obviously interested in their new city.
So exactly.
The origin of them, I mean, you mentioned that they do sometimes resemble the Anat system. Do you find any proof, or do you think that perhaps they were brought in with the Arabs in 870? Even the Romans, I suppose, would have known about that kind of Anat system, even when they came in, 218 BC, when the Romans came to Malta.
Exactly. So, when it comes to Anat systems or Kanat systems, one needs to be aware of the fact that they are a Persian invention. So they would have been invented first in the Middle East, roughly around the 8th to the 6th century BC. Now, during the Roman period, Kanats were certainly known to the Romans in the area around Jordan, Israel, and Syria, and Lebanon. But it seems that during the Roman period, Egypt would have been the buffer zone for Kanat distribution. And it seems that a further westward distribution along the coast of North Africa of this technology would only have taken place with the dawn of the Muslim period. So it seems that Kanats would have been introduced into Spain by the Moors, it is also likely that Qanats would have been introduced into Sicily with the Muslim occupation of the Sicilian island itself. For instance, the study on Qanats in Sicily is still an ongoing process. There is much more that needs to be done in Sicily itself. For instance, when it comes to the availability of water galleries in the southeast of Sicily, I think I'm one of the pioneers who's actually taking note of the existence of these systems. But the better studied Qanat systems in Sicily are in Palermo. And you've got archaeologists or architects such as Pietro Todaro, who's been since the 80s quite actively taking an interest in the Qanat systems of Palermo. And he has actually encountered some Muslim period sherds as being physically present within Qanat systems, and that has allowed the tentative dating of these Palermitan water systems. So quite possibly Qanats in Palermo would be dating back to the Muslim period, and my hypothesis is that these Qanat systems would have possibly reached Malta during the course of the late 12th, early 13th century, and I do suspect that they would have been actually imported locally simply to actually develop further this Giardino type of situation where you've got, as you've very well mentioned when it comes to Cimbria, a type of horticultural gardening, market gardening situation where you're growing your fruit trees, your citrus, and one has to actually mention the fact that citrus cultivation actually does necessitate a lot of water availability. So these areas would have been specifically developed through the use of galleries in order to allow such a type of cultivation locally.
Well, unfortunately, our time is up. I really look forward to publication from your PhD. I hope that happens. And I can see that there's more research to be done. And I hope that you'll enjoy doing that research yourself in the future. Thank you so much, Dr.
Thank you very much for the invitation.
You've been listening to University Matters on Campus FM. Do join me again next week. This is Patricia Camilleri saying goodbye.